Okay, let's unpack this. If you think the main global strategic conversation is still all about the South China Sea, well, you might need to adjust your map a bit. Look immediately westward towards the Bay of Bengal.
That's exactly right. What we're doing in this deep dive is looking at this phenomenal convergence of factors happening right there, right now. We're synthesizing recent news that shows a huge coordinated flurry of activity.
Yeah, it's everything. Multi-billion dollar infrastructure promises, high-stakes money moves, and even direct military signaling. And it seems laser-focused on Bangladesh and its neighbors.
Our mission today really is to take all this news from, say, September and early October 2025 and show how deep capital investment, these kinetic military moves, and importantly, urgent humanitarian crises are all colliding.
Making the Bay of Bengal, well, it's rapidly becoming the crucial access point, isn't it, for any major power wanting influence in the Indian Ocean.
Absolutely. And the immediate flashpoint, the center of this geopolitical heat, seems to be Dhaka. We've seen Beijing launch this very visible, stepped-up courtship of Bangladesh's interim government that's currently led by Chief Advisor Yunus.
And China's view here isn't just about trade, is it?
No, not at all. They see Bangladesh as, frankly, an absolutely vital access point for their long-term strategic goals across the entire Indian Ocean region.
So let's look at the bait, the carrot being dangled, its infrastructure, right? This river lever idea.
Exactly, the river lever. It centers on controlling, or at least managing, critical resources like water. And what's fascinating is how these massive engineering projects almost instantly become geopolitical leverage.
The prime example being the Teesta Master Plan.
Precisely. That's a hugely critical water management project for Bangladesh. And China has very actively offered to, well, underwrite and advance this plan. It's become a central piece of their outreach.
And they're not being subtle about it. We saw the Chinese envoy, Yao Wen, state publicly that a technical team would visit Dhaka within months. That was specifically after Bangladesh sought financing from Beijing. It's a huge economic incentive.
It is huge. But, and this is really important, we have to add the necessary nuance here. This is absolutely not a done deal.
Okay, so the offer's public, the visit's expected, but no ink on paper yet.
Right. A finance ministry official in Bangladesh pointed out some local caution, confirming, no formal investment confirmation has actually been finalized from Beijing, just the expectation of the team visit.
So the commitment isn't formal, yet the public discussion itself, the expectation of this funding, that already gives Beijing influence, doesn't it? How does that work?
Well, it works because Dhaka desperately needs this project. By dangling the possibility of fulfilling that need, China forces Bangladesh to constantly weigh that economic lifeline against its other key relationships, primarily with India and with the U.S.
So it shapes their thinking, their internal debates, their foreign policy, even before any money actually changes hands.
Exactly. It's leverage from the mere possibility.
Okay, that brings us to the physical assets then, the ports. Whether the Teesta funding happens or not, the real prize may be controlling or accessing these port facilities. We need to talk about their dual-use value. This goes way beyond just, loading and unloading cargo containers.
Absolutely, way beyond. Dual use means a port can handle commercial ships one day,
Yeah.
and the next, it could provide crucial logistics, maybe refueling, maintenance, perhaps even intelligence support for naval ships.
Yeah.
It gives a power a permanent or semi-permanent footprint on foreign soil.
And we're not talking about minor little docks here. These are busy growing gateways. Mongla Port, for instance. Just in the 2.5 months up to late September, it handled 171 overseas ships, moved over 1.8 million tons of cargo.
Huge numbers. And then look at Chattogram, the other main hub. Its operational throughput grew 12% year over year just in the first quarter of fiscal 26. These aren't static assets. Access agreements for upgrading them or even just using them are incredibly valuable prizes for regional and global players.
Right. So if the economic discussion is about future influence and capital investment, we need to shift to the actual military muscle being flexed in the bay right now. What's the biggest military concern India is trying to counter there, and how's it playing out on the water?
The main concern is intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, ISR. Or more accurately, the ISR signaling. This is that direct military cat and mouse game we mentioned, being played out basically in plain sight.
And the main piece on the board recently was China's Yuan Wang 5 ship re-entering the Indian Ocean region, the missile tracker.
That's the one. They call it a research vessel, of course, but its primary purpose is much more sensitive.
It collects telemetry, right, missile test data.
Exactly. Telemetry is all the data speed, trajectory, accuracy from a missile launch. By tracking those tests, a ship like the Yuanwang 5 gathers critical intelligence on another country's defense capabilities. That obviously raises major security concerns, especially New Delhi, but also Washington.
And the timing here wasn't accidental, was it? This intelligence gathering seemed almost perfectly synced with an Indian move.
It really did. The ship's re-entry into the area overlapped almost precisely with India issuing a NOTAM, a notice to airmen. That NOTAM signaled the likely missile test was about to happen right there in the Bay of Bengal.
And reports suggested it was for a shorter range system, sub 1,500 kilometers.
That's what the reports indicated, yeah. Suggesting perhaps a test focused on mid-range deterrence capabilities. So you have this sequence. China sends an ISR ship to gather data, and India almost immediately responds with a very public display of its own deterrent power.
That's the definition of a high-stakes strategic game played out for everyone to see.
Absolutely. It's signaling in its purest form.
Now, Bangladesh, caught in the middle of all this, isn't just a passive observer, right? They seem to be actively hedging their bets.
Definitely. Even while they're courting Chinese money for the Teesta project, Dhaka is making sure to maintain its relationships with Western powers, too.
We saw that with the Pacific Angel exercise, didn't we, in Chittagong?
Exactly. Pacific Angel 25-3, held in mid-September. It was a 7-day exercise focused on humanitarian assistance and disaster relief, HADR.
And the participant list tells the story of that balancing act. You had, what, about 90-odd personnel from the U.S. Air Force?
Right, around 92 U.S. Air Force personnel working alongside about 90 from the Bangladesh Air Force, and also participants from the Sri Lanka Air Force. They focused on things like medical exchanges, aviation security, non-lethal, but high-value cooperation.
So it clearly shows Dhaka keeping lines open, engaging with the U.S. and its allies, at the same time as they're entertaining these huge Chinese financial offers.
It's classic hedging, balancing relationships to maximize options.
We should probably just quickly pause here and mention something about the information space around this, too. During those Chittagong drills, remember that viral video claiming a Chinese Navy ship had aggressively approached Bangladesh?
Ah, yes, the disinformation risk. That clip turned out to be completely false, right?
Yeah. AFP fact check debunked it. The footage was old from the Scarborough Shoal incident involving the Philippines years ago. It's just a crucial reminder for everyone, for you listening, to be incredibly cautious about these near-war clips that pop up online. They're often designed purely to confuse and escalate tensions.
A very important point. Okay, so that maneuvering brings us naturally to the other side of the bay, to India's strategic posture. We need to look at how India is reacting, how it's hardening its own eastern flank in response to all this regional activity.
And the focus there is squarely on the Andaman and Nicobar Islands, the ANC. We saw a recent change in command there, but the underlying message seems consistent: to keep building up infrastructure, maintain high readiness.
And the absolute centerpiece of that infrastructure effort, the single most significant project in that whole region, is the, well, highly controversial Greater Nicobar Project. Specifically, the International Container Transshipment Port, the ICTP, planned for Galathea Bay.
I remember seeing a report, I think it was India Today, using a really striking analogy, calling it India's potential Pearl Harbor project.
That analogy really underscores the perceived dual-use potential and the profound military strategic weight being placed on this project.
So explain that dual-use logic again. Why is it more than just a big commercial port?
Because strategically, its location is everything. It's not just about capturing global shipping traffic, although that's part of the economic rationale. Militarily, it's positioned to be an absolutely crucial element of India's sea denial strategy.
Okay, break that down for us. What does sea denial strategy mean in this specific context near the Malacca Strait?
Right, so sea denial isn't necessarily about controlling every square inch of the ocean all the time. It's more about having the capability, the power projection ability, to rapidly prevent an adversary from using that critical sea space for their own military purposes when you need to.
Okay, stopping someone else using it rather than dominating it yourself.
Precisely. And the ICTP at Galathea Bay is strategically positioned right smack near the approaches to the Malacca Strait, one of the world's absolute busiest, most vital maritime choke points. building this huge, capable facility there gives India the potential to deny, or at the very least severely complicate, any rival power's military movements through or near those critical sea lanes. If you just picture the map, its proximity to that global shipping artery is basically unmatched in that part of the Indian Ocean.
So it's a massive strategic bet by India, positioning itself to assert control over that crucial maritime geography. But, you know, while we talk about these huge geopolitical moves, ships, satellites, billion-dollar ports, we really need to connect it back to the human reality on the ground. Let's pivot to that human-centered context that, frankly, underpins a lot of the strategic calculation.
That context is unavoidable, and it's primarily Myanmar's war-torn Rakhine state. It shares that long, often volatile border with Bangladesh. Right now, aid groups are sounding loud alarms. They're warning that Rakhine faces a potential hunger catastrophe.
Why now? What's the immediate cause?
It's about access. UN aid access has been severely restricted, apparently by both the military junta and increasingly by the Arakan Army, the ethnic armed group controlling large parts of Rakhine.
And with Rakhine bordering Bangladesh, which already hosts nearly a million Rohingya refugees, the spillover risk is immense.
Exactly. That humanitarian crisis instantly reframes the strategic urgency, not just for Dhaka, but for all the global powers trying to manage stability in the region.
We saw that urgency play out very publicly recently, didn't we? At that UN meeting.
Yes, the first ever high-level UN meeting focused solely on the Rohingya issue. And you heard Rohingya representatives making these desperate, urgent appeals directly to the international community for protection, for safe ways to return home.
And this is where we saw that key diplomatic move from Bangladesh's leadership. Chief Advisor Yunus used that global stage, the UN platform, to explicitly call for effective pressure.
Not just on the Myanmar military junta, which you might expect, but explicitly on the Arakan army as well, to enable Rohingya repatriation.
That's a direct public challenge to a powerful non-state actor.
Highly significant. Naming the Arakan Army, or AA, like that is a big deal. The AA is a very potent insurgent force. They control huge swaths of territory along that border. They are a primary factor in the stability or instability of that entire region.
So Dhaka is essentially telling the world, you can't solve this, you can't get repatriation unless you deal with the AA too.
Pretty much. They're forcing the international community to acknowledge and somehow grapple with this powerful non-state group that directly impacts border stability, regional security, even as Dhaka itself is trying to juggle these huge investment deals and balance its military ties. It elevates that local border risk right up to the level of global diplomatic necessity.
Okay, so let's try and quickly synthesize this. We've got three major forces really churning in the Bay of Bengal right now. First, there's China's massive economic pull, using infrastructure like the Teesta offers as leverage.
Second, you have India's strategic deterrence push those missile tests happening right alongside the spy ship's presence, plus the long-term hardening of the Nicobar Islands, clearly aimed at sea denial near Malacca.
And third, threading through it all, is the absolute necessity of managing regional stability. We see that in the U.S.-led HADR drills, but most urgently in the humanitarian crisis spilling out of Rakhine and the diplomatic pressure it creates.
Right. And this complex interplay raises, I think, a really important final question, something for you, the listener, to think about. Given that regional stability is absolutely essential for trade to flow for these massive port projects and the Teesta plan to actually be viable.
Yes, yeah, stability is the bedrock for all of it.
So what are the broader security risks? What new dynamics are introduced when Bangladesh's leadership, when Chief Advisor Yunus, stands up at the UN and explicitly names the powerful Arakan army as a target for international pressure?
Pointing the finger directly at the AA.
Exactly. That specific diplomatic move, however necessary Yunus felt it was for pursuing repatriation, how does it actually influence stability right there along that critical border? And by extension, how might it affect the long-term viability and risk assessment for every single one of those international projects and strategic calculations we've just spent time discussing?
How does putting diplomatic heat on the AA potentially complicate everything else China, India, the U.S., and Bangladesh itself are trying to achieve in the region? That's a critical question to ponder.